This is what should be done by one who... Ooh. Oh, hello. Strange noise. We'll try that again. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, a pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
All right, Venerable,
how are you? Great. And it sounds okay?
Sounds good to me. I think Marlene will agree.
So. We had a weird... We just started chanting and it went all strange. So. So tonight, perhaps we'll talk about the heart, metta, but also the heart in a bigger sense. The wonderful thing about metta practice and meditation practice is that it opens the heart. And the heart being open is very liberating. It's very freeing. It's wonderful. But there's a problem. And the problem basically is that when we start to open the heart, we realize a lot more challenges were there that, you know, they didn't really put in the pamphlet kind of thing. You know, it starts off all wonderful and everything's shiny and great and flowers and loveliness, and then it's challenges all the way and what's going on. Actually, this is how it is. When we start to open the heart, we want to give flowers to everyone. And this is the big shock. The heart is very naive. The heart wants to love everybody and be loved. And yet the world won't allow that as such. Our society doesn't really have room for this. We've changed and yet the world hasn't. But then there are other challenges. The heart is very volatile. It hears of the smallest injustice and it jumps on its horse, grabs a sword and rides off into battle, for goodness. And yet, the intellect sitting there going, you're riding off into battle, you don't even know what you're doing and you're going off in your underwear. Get back here. And this is the thing. The heart doesn't realize what it's getting into. So it's also unaware of what's going on. And the other problem is, it's also very turbulent. We reach the highest of loving kindness and compassion and all these wonderful qualities and joy and everything else. And then ups and downs, because love and hate are two sides of one coin. Happiness and sorrow are two sides of one coin. We go up, we go down, go all around. So there's a challenge here. And a lot of people, when they start meditating, go through these challenges. It's something we all face. It's part of the path of opening the heart. But there are things that make it so challenging that many people give up. And they feel frustrated, disappointed. They feel they can't go on. And they give up. They give up meditating. They give up everything else. And they just get depressed. And it doesn't necessarily need to be this way. In the Buddhist practice, they introduce a very, very important term. And in Pali, it is sati sampajanya. And sati, most people would be familiar with. It means mindfulness. Sampajanya is an interesting word. It's actually two words, really. Sam, S-A-M, is a prefix, which means fully. It's actually part of my name, as it happens. But so, and pajanya is a sort of a shape word for wisdom. So fully wise and mindful. So at the same time, we bring that informed mindfulness, our educated mindfulness, our intelligent mindfulness in with the heart. And that helps us to go forward, because then we can open up the heart more. But when these challenges come and hit us, they don't matter so much, because we understand what's going on. We can be more open. And yet it doesn't affect us so much, because the wisdom is there. The mindfulness is there. We know what's going on in the situation. Many times we want to do good things. We want to do wonderful things. And yet they're not necessarily so wise. There's that old saying that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. When the reality is, from a Buddhist point of view, the road to hell is paved with mindless intentions. We don't know what's going on. We want to give. We want to share. We want to be open and love everything, and it's wonderful. And yet, without mindfulness, we run into trouble more and more often. And then we bump into people who have had a grumpy day, or they're just grumpy normally. And, you know, we just feel really deflated. We feel really hurt. And yet, it doesn't need to be that way. So mindfulness, fully informed by wisdom, and opening the heart, is the best of both worlds, which is fantastic. We can open the heart more through the meditation, through the daily life practice, whether it's, you know, doing nice things for other people or doing nice things for yourself, living well, all these kinds of things really help to improve things. But with these two things together, the opening of the heart and the informed mindfulness, it really, really is a great benefit. But how do we improve our mindfulness and bring them together? Because this is the thing, the moment you start opening the heart and you're feeling that loving kindness, it's so easy to get carried away on it. We just want it to be there forever. And yet it fades away, it changes. And we feel hurt and depressed when it's not doing the thing it's supposed to be doing. And that's how it is. So bring the mindfulness in. But where do we start? Ironically, we start in contexts like this. Fabulously, doing meditation is field work. We're studying it in the lab, so to speak, is that we're sitting down and experiencing what happens when we sit and meditate. Do you relax more, or are you more tense? When you practice, what's going on? And we bring that into our everyday life. So not necessarily you will be able to use this straight away in your office or everything else, but gradually, you start to become more aware of how we relate to people, how we interact with people, and how we interact with ourselves. And this exchange going on all the time. How does it feel? What imprint does it leave on us? And how do we deal with all these troubles at the end of the day? Because for a lot of people, at the end of the day, after a long day's work, they come home, they have to deal with the family, they have to deal with all the troubles that they've had, and they have to process all the stuff that's going on. Most people just crash and have to sleep it off, if they're lucky. Not many people can do that. They basically can't sleep through the night, and then they have to get up the next day and do it all over again. So very, very challenging. And in the meditation, we can slow it down. We can be open in that time. We can let the heart be open in a safe way without being exposed, without being threatened. Because that's the other problem with the heart. It's vulnerable. It's really vulnerable. And when it gets hurt, it can't open anymore. It shuts itself off. And it makes it harder and harder and harder to open up again. So you might have you might go on a retreat, or you just might have a nice meditation and feel all this wonderful loving kindness and everything, or compassion and joy, and then then it disappears and you can't get it back again. And the great joy is understanding through this sati sampajanya, bringing back our informed mindfulness, is that loving kindness is always there. It's always available. The more and more we let go, the more and more we calm down, the more and more we can be open. It just comes naturally. The heart wants to be open. And yet to survive, which is perfectly rational, we put up our defenses, we put up our firewall, we have to keep everything back. Perfectly rational, perfectly reasonable. And yet, too much of this creates a prison for the heart. And it wants to be open. And so the journey of opening the heart is doing it in the best possible way. Because if we just try and open the heart, we run into trouble. And then again, the heart tries to shut itself off because it feels so vulnerable. It feels so threatened. It doesn't want to go through that pain again. And it locks itself down. And we can't face it. I've met so many people who have really, really tried to meditate. And they have great progress, great experiences and everything else. And then all of a sudden they just can't sit on the cushion anymore. They just can't bear it because they can't integrate it so well. And the moment they go into work and everything else, they just feel threatened. You know, not just going into work, just reading the paper or getting on the internet or just doing the normal things we do. And they just can't function so well. And they don't understand what's going on. And this informed mindfulness, the sati sampajanya, is a great tool because it gives us so much confidence, because we can see in real time what's going on in our minds, in our emotional world, in our psychological world, our intellectual world, and our minds as a whole. We can see what's going on and understand it. And that gives us more confidence that we don't have to be afraid of thoughts and feelings and sensations. We don't have to be afraid of this. It's just part of who we are. And so we can relax more. So they kind of work on each other. The more we understand, the easier it gets. The easier it gets, the more we can let go. The more we can let go, the more free we feel. The more free we feel, the more we enjoy this. And it goes in a wonderful positive feedback loop. It just gets better and better, and we just enjoy it so much more. And at the same time, we still bring in that intelligence to recognize that there's some people that, of course, we won't really be able to interact with easily. You know, they're just grumpy, or they're just not interested, or they've got all their barriers and firewalls and troubles and everything else, and they're just not interested. And we can't really communicate well, and that's fine. That's just how they are, that's how we are. That's perfectly fine. And so we can live together much more easily because we're not trying to push through our agendas and everything else and at the same time feel threatened by everyone pushing their agendas onto us. And this meditation gradually, gradually, gradually gives us our own lives back. And that's one of the greatest things about this. Especially in terms of teaching, it's all about helping people get their lives back. And in order to do that, we need to be confident in ourselves to be able to live our own lives. Because what's the point of, you know, getting your life back when you can't use it, when it's too painful to live in? What's the point? You know, you're just going to run off into some other coping mechanism. which again is perfectly rational, perfectly understandable. Is there another way? And of course there is. But you only really find it when you start practicing, when you start testing these things out. How does it feel? How does it work? Is it lessening suffering and improving happiness? Because that's the measure the Buddha himself put down. You can tell you're moving in the right direction if suffering is decreasing and not increasing. And that's really the measure. So when we improve our meditation slowly, 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 and enjoy it, it actually improves so much quicker, which is a great irony. We love it so much more. And so when we talk about the heart and all the challenges we face, it's a kind of, how to really say it? It's like when the heart starts to open up, there's this longing to express, to share, to love and to be loved and everything else. And of course it runs off and, you know, wants to do all these wonderful things and change the world and, you know, do all these things that's going to make everybody happy. And yet in this particular instance, it's good just to tap the brakes a little bit and take stock of what we're doing. And it's okay. It's okay to have these challenges. In fact, the reality is the fact we're having these challenges as practitioners is a sign we're moving in the right direction. Because if everything is easy, if everything is kind of going to plan, the warning bells start ringing, because you start to get lulled into a false sense of security there, that you feel that, oh, I've got this meditation thing, I know what to do, and get stuck very easily. And then you start to stagnating, because we don't value it. We don't see the benefit of sitting down for just a few minutes a day and calming the mind down and just relaxing and just enjoying the moment for no other reason than just to be here. It's kind of a very strange idea. We don't really have room for this in the world, you know, to enjoy the moment. You know, we originally had to work harder and harder to succeed, and then it changed. We had to think smarter rather than work harder. Now the environment has changed again with technology, that we have to work harder and think smarter. And what tomorrow will bring with improvements in technology, no one knows. But it was only going to get more challenging. The demands are going to get higher. The standards are going to get ever higher. And the deadlines are going to get ever faster and sharper. So being able to use these skills, that we can come back to the present moment, which has always been here, is a wonderful gift. It's a wonderful tool. And it makes life so much worth living. It makes life so much easier. Personally, I avoid sort of people who have the shiny approach and just sort of, or, you know, talk about the good sales pitch. Because that's lovely. The inspiration is important. Looking at the good side of things is important. And sort of, you know, a little bit of something to look forward to, you could say. But at the same time, it's like we're putting someone behind the wheel of the car, you know, putting someone in the car to drive without giving them any lessons. They could end up in all kinds of accidents. And so by looking at the good as well as the challenges and how we can navigate those, is far more worth doing. Well, I've been going for a few minutes. Do you want to go a bit longer for a talk, or shall we jump into the meditation?
It's up to you, Venerable. Maybe a little bit more, because it's very interesting what you're saying.
Okay. Well, the... it's how it goes. That's right. Being able to laugh at mistakes is a great thing. What's wonderful about making mistakes, completely ad-libbing here, is that they don't matter. When your heart starts to open And it's been informed through sati sampajanya, as in an educated mindfulness. We're being aware of what's going on, but we're specifically knowing what we're supposed to be looking at and what to do with it. Then so many of these little things that we take so personally, that we take so seriously, that really depress us so much and disappoint us so much, they don't matter so much to us. They're just another thing along the way. So we can enjoy things so much more. And that's really the whole point of this, is that energy to open the heart, and that the energy that comes from opening the heart, as well as incorporating the wisdom, the sati sampajanya and everything else, being best of both worlds, improves the practice, because it's no longer so much of a challenge. The problem basically is people are looking for some grandiose thing, and they think, oh, I'm never going to get there, it's too hard and everything else, because we've put such huge barriers there, because the heart is so vulnerable. It's been hurt before, often many, many times. The intellect isn't brought into the question. We've had a discussion on this before. There's this huge divorce between the head and the heart. They're not really on speaking terms. So we have to bring them together to get the best result here. And that's really why this is so important. Because the moment that we bring these things together, we are more prepared to face these challenges in life, as well as the things that come along in our meditation, which is really, you know, there's not a lot of difference between life and meditation, really, anyway. But the things in our daily life, in our families, in our work, in our education, whatever we do, there's challenges all along the way. And because we have been closed off for so long, we can't really interact with people. And this is something that happens all the time. We talk at people rather than talking with people. We don't really talk to each other and share a conversation. We just talk at each other, and because we're closed off. And we never realize that we've never had that opportunity to communicate with people, to share with people, because we've been so shut off. And deep, deep down, we don't want to open up, because we know that we can't handle it. We know that we can't manage this so well. We have our own internal security systems that are saying, we can't go there, we're not going there. So to bring in that mindfulness and wisdom changes the paradigm, changes the situation, because now we can deal with it. Now we are able to look at this in a more effective and productive and creative way that we can deal with these things. Close enough?
Most definitely close enough. Thank you, everyone.
Okay, so as usual, everybody, please stand up. Give yourself a bit of a stretch. Adjust your clothes. Do everything you need to do to be able to settle in. It's always nice to loosen up, because that helps to relax. It sets the stage almost right away. It's a great trick. So, when you're ready, please settle in and close your eyes. And just start off by taking a few deep, relaxing breaths just to settle in. What we're going to do is use the wisdom to relax the body, and at the same time, use the heart to relax the body. That relaxing is both an act of kindness as well as the rational thing to do. We don't have to force the breath, just let the breath be smooth and natural. But let it go deep. Let the breath open. Now bring your attention more to the body itself. And start with your head and shoulders. And relax there. Relax any tension, any hardness. Use both intentions of kindness and intelligence. Perhaps a good smile. And then move on to your neck and shoulders. Often so much tension is hidden in your neck area. And just adjust it as you need it. And then relax your arms. As your body relaxes, the joints change shape. So just adjust them as you need them. Now relax your upper back and lower back and settle into the chair or the cushion if you're sitting on one. And then relax your tummy. We often store so much tension in our stomach and our lower back. Now is the time that we can let it go. And then move on to your legs. Relax your knees and your ankles. Is there any sensation in your body of relaxation that's pleasant? Spend a moment with that relaxation. Why is it pleasant? What messages is it sending you? Now imagine either a light or a sensation that represents kindness, that represents awareness and intelligence. And let it slowly and gently expand to fill your whole body. And as it does, to relax more and to let the light grow. And if it appears to you as a light or as a sensation, treat it as a dear friend. Let it come into your space as something or someone you want to be with, that you want to spend time with. And now, in the last few minutes, use the kindness and the wisdom, the fully wise mindfulness, to wish happiness and well-being to yourself, so that you can bring this into your everyday life. And extend that wish, that wisdom, to include the ones you love. And may they be happy and have well-being. And include all the others that you're acquainted with. Include them in this picture as well, for happiness. And if you can, see if you have room for those who give you trouble, and see if you have room for them as well. For all beings to be happy and free from suffering. And I will now ring the gong 3 times. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. And welcome back. You survived.
Like questions and answers and a discussion, what would you like?
Questions. Always into questions.
Alright, sir. Oh yes, Sky, would you like to go ahead, Sky, please? Welcome.
Hi, Venerable. Thank you so much. Just at the end, you got on the meta and you said, see if you have room for those that are difficult, or you used a different word.
Cause you trouble.
cause you trouble, yeah. I'm only 7 years or so trying to study Buddhism and learning meditation. I have a small dysfunctional family on my blood side, not my married side. Well, everybody's dysfunctional, everybody. But, I mean, just really dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. Mental illness, drug addiction, alcoholism, just delusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I love my sister. I have only one. Almost obsessively. But I can't spend 5 minutes with her. Not 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
60 years. And it's just getting a little more difficult. The older I get and the more peace that I find within myself to survive this world that we're in today.
Mm-hmm.
I send her love and metta, and I just want to have, you can't tell me or reassure me that keeping away from her physically, when she's begging me to come to her, she's only 30-minute drive. I don't want to ever feel guilty or that I threw her out of my heart. I just can't spend 5 minutes with her.
Mm-hmm.
She's a fundamental Christian, Bible thumping, has one conversation in her whole being.
Mm-hmm.
And she's always trying to save me, and it's getting worse as she gets older. I'm lost at how to love her. How do you love somebody who, you know, they have it in the Bible to love the unlovable? And I'm sure Buddha loved a leper. You know, those are kind of physically unlovable.
Mm.
But that's easier than to love an angry, hateful person.
Mm.
So she's my only relative. So can you give me a little advice?
Yeah. In cases like this, very often people are attracted to the fundamentalist Bible-thumping way because of their own insecurity. And as they get older, that insecurity grows because they're afraid of the next world. They're afraid of what's going to happen to them when they die. They're afraid of all that. And then they're afraid of the people who they love and are in their world, and they're afraid for them as well. And their insecurity grows and grows and grows. And then they, trying to help, wanting to help, then become a burden to others, become unlivable with others. Yeah. And in this particular case, talking about insecurity is a better way to go, because addressing those heart issues, which are common to all of us, none of us are getting any younger. All of us will one day die. And being able to find that common ground, Christianity in her life is soothing that pain, but it becomes a pain to others. Yeah.
She lashes out and using God's words, you know, I mean, it's my husband, who's a very quiet, humble, has no religion but Mother Nature, and he's almost, I tell him, you know, if you weren't who you are, I would say you were enlightened, but he's the super guy. But he says she made me schizophrenic.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I deal with the physicality, with her begging me to visit?
When she wants you to visit, is it because she's disconnected herself? And that by having you with her, she's able to reconnect in some way? Is there an element of that?
I am the only person she will allow to hug her.
Hmm.
She's not a physical. I'm a very huggy, you know, I want to hug every one of you out there, you know, just like, I really just want to love you and hug you. And she lets me hold her and hug her.
Hmm.
And she misses that the most, because she's unlovable to almost everyone else.
Yeah.
And she's a beautiful person.
Mm.
She's a beautiful person. I mean, if you just met her, you'd say, what's wrong with Sky? She's a lovely lady, you know?
Mm.
You know, it's a subtle disease.
It's because of that vulnerability.
It's because of me. I'm staying away because my physical, I start to tremble. I can't say a single word without there being like an argument.
Mm-hmm.
She's just so angry. What you said made a lot of sense. She is afraid. She'll tell you she's not, but she is afraid, I think. So I'm going to approach it with, like, it was a before, like, I'm not a lion tamer. I cannot go into the lion's den.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but now it's beyond the lion. It's a fear, an animal that is laden with fear. So I'm going to have to analyze or meditate on how you deal with people that are, or an animal, covered in fear.
Mm.
You've got to gain their trust, but you can't gain a deluded, it's going to go like this till the end, I think. So I just have to learn, I'm just going to have to learn how to deal with it.
Well, there's...
I'm sorry it takes so long.
No, these are important issues, because this is life. And they're our nearest and dearest, and we want the best for them. Unfortunately, for someone who's so vulnerable in that situation and has so burdened their own loved ones, who it's almost a kind of, the heart is almost traumatized having going through this, and it just doesn't want to go there again. It puts up such a strong boundary. Yeah, and this is the thing. For ourselves, it's most important to be able to soften that boundary. Because for your sister, she may never get over that fear. She may never get over that vulnerability. Perhaps there may be a schizophrenic element there. It's hard to say. But for ourselves, it's far more important to recognize that perhaps we have been hurt, that we have been trying. Yeah, we've been having to deal with so much stuff, so much burden, that to accept that is a big step forward. And so when we can, in ourselves, have metta for that and compassion for that, and we can let that go. Because until we do, we will never be able to talk to somebody in that situation, because that firewall will immediately come up. There will be immediately that feeling that going, I just don't want to go there. And in extreme cases, that can cause panic attacks in people. Because you can imagine it, the mind just does not want to go there. It sees danger, it sees trauma, it sees pain and suffering, and it just does not want any more of that. And so to be able to soften that in our own heart is really important. It's not always easy, because it's been bottled up for so long. It must have been many decades. Yeah. And so a big step is to be able to accept that this is a large amount of time that this difficulty has had, and therefore it will take time. We don't have to fix it immediately. But just being able to be open to that feeling, that sort of, it's not really resistance, but it's that kind of, you know, hesitation, you could say. And to be able to accept that. And that's okay. That's a big step forward.
It's okay.
It's okay. Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't always fix everything. Mm. So it's just something you're not just going to be able to fix in this life.
Yeah.
And I don't want to come back. Sometimes in my beginning Buddhism days, I used to think that I'm here because of her and my husband, because I loved them so much that I had to come back to help them again. But I don't want to have the desire. I want to cut that so I don't do it again.
Right.
If this is repetitive.
No, this is fine. Because this is, as we were talking about before, when the heart wants to help people, and yet it doesn't know how. So we need to bring in that wisdom element and that intelligence.
Wisdom.
Right.
Wisdom with the metta.
Right. They have to work together.
Ooh.
Thank you, Sahi.
Thank you.
Thank you, Venerable. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Venerable, we do have some questions in the chat here, so if you'd be happy, I'd like to read them for you.
No, please, yeah.
I'd really like to know the secret to surviving with feeling things intensely.
That is a more tricky area because the intensity has different causes and it's very context orientated. So firstly, we would have to match up, we would have to discuss the context. We would have to also discuss why there's that intensity. Because a lot of the times, we may have gone through so many challenges, we may have been enduring things for so long that we just can't deal with it, and then there's this intense feeling that I don't want to go there. At the same time, we may be suffering a lot and we want to get rid of it and we want a solution now, and there's an intense desire to get and have a solution and have resolution of these things. Because what the mind's constantly trying to do is find a resolution. It's doing it all the time. And when it can't do that, and when it has strong desire to do that, it just goes harder and harder and harder and gets more frustrated or more disappointed. So in this particular case, it's very difficult to answer that without knowing a bit more of the context. So if the questioner can include a bit more, we could work a bit more on that.
You'd like to put another comment in the chat? I'd be very, very happy to relay it on. This is from Shirisha in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Bunty, your metaphor about the hard riding out on a horse to save the day was hilarious. And I always picture that in my mind when I feel like having to save the world. Can this feeling become righteous anger in response to problems we read about?
Oh.
On the television, etc.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. Because when the heart wants to fix that problem, and yet it's getting more and more feedback, so it's getting more and more news in the media that either the global problem's getting worse or they're hearing about it again and again and again and again, that, the as I said before, the mind wants to resolve this, and therefore it pushes harder and harder and harder. But at the same time, that kind of righteousness, which can be a really dangerous thing, comes from ego. Because we are so insecure and we have been so, you know, life is impermanent, life is chaotic, life is pretty harsh. Because of that, we build up this ego to protect ourselves, to defend ourselves, to navigate the world. In many ways, ego is very, very rational. But when it gets overpowered, as in when it comes too strong, it loses rationality and it becomes all about the ego. It becomes all about that righteousness and I must conquer, I must have this, you know, this is not right. And very easily it becomes righteous anger. Very, very easily. And of course, very, very dangerously. And when you're in that kind of situation or you know someone who's in that situation, they're far more likely to jump on that horse in their underwear with their horse and just charge off into battle. And they end up riding off a cliff. It happens very, very often. They just go straight into danger without understanding what they're getting into. This is why that mindfulness and wisdom has to come into that picture. But unfortunately, when it becomes that stage of righteous anger, it's very, very hard to slow down at that point. You know, you're pretty much charging at full speed. To hit the brakes is not going to be easy. So, yes, it can turn that way.
Thank you, Venerable. We have another question in the chat from Nikki. Hi, Venerable. Thank you for your talk and meditation. Please, could you expand on the heart being hurt? I have been hurt like all people. I am now on a deep level, don't trust people. I see through the perspective that I will be judged, and it stops me from connecting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is again, this happens to all of us. When the heart is hurt and it doesn't know how to deal with this. In Buddhism, this is called avijja. And this word is very, very important because when we look at dependent origination and the more deeper philosophical stuff, avijja is the core problem. From avijja, we have desire. We want to do this, we want to do this, because we don't know how to resolve this. The mind, as I said, is constantly trying to resolve its problems. And when it doesn't know how, big trouble. And so the issue is, when we don't know how to resolve these things, we continue to be at risk. And so we can't trust people because we have this pain within that we haven't been able to resolve. And our mind doesn't want to go there again. So it puts up big boundaries, big firewalls to protect ourselves. It's a very fundamental logic. It's very rational. The problem is, it's a prison. We can't be free in that situation. Sure, there are plenty of times there are people who we just simply will not be able to trust because they have their agenda. You know, they're out to make a dollar in pretty unscrupulous ways. So that's certainly the case. But when we can't trust people on an ordinary level, we can't be open to them, it's because we have been hurt. We've clammed up, basically, is a good little metaphor. We've shelled in, and we're not going to open until we feel safe. But at the same time, that makes us hypersensitive. So we're constantly measuring all the time, looking for little signals. Can I trust this person? Are they going to betray me? And at the same time, because there's that pain and fear from the past that we haven't been able to resolve, there's a bit of paranoia. And so straight away, we won't trust anyone. How to deal with this? Again, it's a slow process. But firstly, it's recognizing that there is pain there. And that's in the heart. And that it can be resolved. But it becomes to admitting that it's there. And to admitting that it does have history. And also admitting through this wisdom that we don't need to carry it around forever. Those situations, they're gone. The next person, we don't know what they're like. They might not be out to, you know, take a dollar from us in unscrupulous ways. Be a bit more open in an experimental way. And then the more and more we can be open, but not naive. Because this is the thing. The heart knows it's naive. That's one of the weird twists in all of this. That's why it's afraid, because it knows that it can't deal with this. So bringing sati sampajanya, that mindful wisdom, into the picture makes us far more confident, far more able to relate to people. So we can talk about this for a very long time, but there may be other questions. So I hope that little bit helped. Ooh.
Unmute, Chris. We can't hear you, Chris.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Yes, that's always a trick. Well, we have some more information on the first question that was asked on surviving with feelings, feeling things so intensely. Mm-hmm. So if you'd be happy, I'll read that for you, Venerable.
Yes, please.
I get sad for things that others think that's how the world is. But they would only feel for their loved ones and not for others. Anger is the same. I read people's responses better for a lack of word, micro-expressions, so full-on feelings everywhere, then disappointed and depressed. If I help and share, I'm treated like a fool, which is okay for me, I won't change that. But why are people selfish and use others and treat good people so badly?
The simple answer is because of insecurity, because everything's impermanent. We are all vulnerable and insecure. And so we mistreat others as a way to get ahead, to protect ourselves. So we put others at the price of our own security, our own gain. So we basically treat other people in rather rotten ways, quite honestly. The problem is that the more and more this happens to us, the more and more we experience being used and abused, the more resentful, the more bitter, the more hurt, the more closed off we are, and the more afraid we are to experience this again. So we feel this very intensely. And when the mentioning of reading micro-expressions is very indicative of this, is that the mind is constantly measuring, you know, looking for these little signals. What is this person like? Can I trust them? Are they dangerous? Are they out to get a dollar out of me, kind of thing? We're constantly measuring this kind of thing because this pain from the past is still there. It hasn't been resolved. And there's still that fear in the past that we haven't been able to deal with in the present. And so we have to recognize that it's there, but we also have to recognize that these intense feelings are clouding our judgment, is that we won't be able to see things very clearly because we're caught up in these habit patterns that are controlling our lives. And you can soften these, but it does take time. But you can really only do it in a place where you feel safe and secure, which in today's world is your own private room in your meditation cushion. This is the advantage of meditating in a context like this, where you have your own space. Nobody else is there. And if there is, well, they're there with your permission. And this is how we move forward. We always are looking for these things because there has been that bitterness, that resentment, that disappointment, that frustration, and that desire for it not to happen again. When we bring wisdom into this picture, we realize that this can't work. We need to look at this in another way. And wisdom starts to provide the answers that the heart can use. So it's, again, it's a big question, but it's an excellent question because it affects so many of us. And facing that bitterness, that anger, and of course the fear to, you know, constantly reading the micro-expressions and everything else, that takes time to soften. So patience is an act of kindness to yourself here. Give yourself that time and space to be free. So I hope that helps a little bit.
Shirishar would like to thank you for your previous comments to Venerable. And Rushi has asked, Venerable, thank you for your lovely talk. Very suitable for most of us, I guess. And I can reiterate that point as well, too. I open my heart to others all the time, and sometimes I feel that I'm being used. I still keep going, but I feel I'm getting exhausted. I wonder where I go wrong. Thank you for your kind advice.
There's a bit of expectation there that can be a problem. If we, and particularly in a sort of a spiritual context or family context as well, if we start to expect others to respond to the kindness we give out and respond in a positive way, that can cause problems. That can be very exhausting. And it's also very, very difficult, particularly this is something we experience a lot in monastic life, is that we very often see other people's agendas. We have to deal with projections. We have to deal with all this stuff every day, not only from ourselves, our own stuff, but the stuff of our fellow monastics and the stuff of the visitors who come. It happens all the time. But it's facing that, being that people are insecure, and that's guiding their judgment. And it's poisoning their mind, basically. They're acting basically like wild animals in a way, trying to get the next thing. And that's a very unfortunate way to live. And that's where the compassion comes in. That compassion is no longer a nicey-nicey thing we do just for being Buddhist. Now this has real-world applications. And bringing in the wisdom in that at the same time gives us a strong degree of security that we won't be treated as a doormat. So we can forgive, but at the same time, we're not going to put ourselves in a vulnerable situation. So hope that helps. Oh, I think you're mute again.
This time I'm doing it a lot. For the first question, we have a response for you, Venerable. Lots of blessings, Venerable, for a wonderful, fitting answer. So thank you, Venerable.
Happy to help.
And Rishi also says thank you as well. Is there anybody else? Is there anybody who would like to unmute and ask a question? You're most welcome to unmute if you would like.
Come on! Be brave!
Lucky last.
Huh?
How do we deal with people who speak ill of us and then we feel the need to justify ourselves and then our mind goes intensely into a loop, taking us away, and we start imagining the situation that has been created and going over it and over it and over it and over it in our minds and trying to justify why we are right to that person?
Now that's an interesting one, because, and it follows the same pattern as everything else, is because we can't resolve why they did that, we constantly try and explain it. And so to be able to explain it, we keep shuffling an alternative until it fits. The problem is that resolution, well, as in that idea that we come up with that we think fits, doesn't necessarily fit reality. It can very often fit what we want to believe. So we often continue these ideas, justifying these, until we feel satisfied and this problem seems to disappear. It's a bit of an illusion, though, because it doesn't actually resolve the problem. It just means that we're satisfied and sort of self-assured for the time being. But, of course, the next time that person crosses our path and we interact with them and we get more of that, the whole cycle kicks in again, the whole machine kicks up again, and we end up justifying, until the point that we're even expecting the next word to be more negativity, judgmentalism, and we just don't want to talk to them. So that one brings a lot more wisdom into the picture, that it actually becomes fascinating to see how this whole mechanical system works, that when we can't resolve the problem in ourselves, it perpetuates, it proliferates, it grows, and it dominates our whole life, and it doesn't need to. So that's where the metta and the wisdom has to come in, and the compassion and the wisdom. So softening to ourselves, because kindness and compassion to ourselves is not judgmental. If it is judgmental, there's something wrong. It's been hijacked by the ego, basically. There's a hidden agenda, a little vested interest still in there, which is usually to make me feel all right, but I want that person to be, you know, less judgmental and less... I want that person to behave as I want them to behave. And that that happens a lot. Until we can be at peace with it through the wisdom and the compassion, understanding the situation more fully, that person has their own insecurities, their own agendas, and they don't have mindfulness and compassion and wisdom in their lives. They're in a much more perilous position, basically, a far more unhappy position. And that is going to rule their lives because they're never going to be able to fix their own stuff. And so they send it on to other people. So... hope that helps.
A wonderful answer. Thank you very much, Venerable. And one that's very helpful. I spent 2 days puzzling over that one, and then I decided to drop it with wisdom on Monday. So, you are correct. Wisdom was the answer. So, thank you very much, Venerable. We've got to the end of the evening, unless anybody else would like to last minute here. Venerable, would you like to be so kind, if I may ask you, to give us a blessing for the night? In Pali,
okay.
Yes, in Pali.
It makes it easier. Hmm. There's so many of them, it's trying to think of one that's relevant. They're all relevant. They're all relevant, they'll all do. We'll give you this one though. Nati me saranang anyang buddho me saranang warang etena sacha wajena sotite hotu sabada. Nati me saranang anyang dhammo me saranang warang etena sacha wajena sotite hotu sabada. Nati me saranang anyang sango me saranang warang etena sacha wajena sotite hotu sabada. And there we go. So hopefully you have a wonderful day and evening.
Thank you, Venerable. We look forward to seeing you again, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Venerable.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thank you.